This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 in the evening, and first up, a couple of responses from our previous story about how apparently if you get called the wrong name a lot, it's actually a sign of affection. Who knew?
Well, I didn't. Yeah. That's new to me.
And you've been living this life, apparently, with your brother.
Well, with my brother, but also in general, despite my email sign-offs, despite introducing myself, I still get called Kevin. It's no longer a big problem or a big issue that affects me personally. It never was, but it's just always funny that, you know, despite naming myself, spelling it out for you, it's not been correct, but it's whatever, you know.
So Tenny, I think, on WhatsApp might agree with you saying it isn't that I'm calling somebody wrong, it's that I'm always called as Kenny rather than Tenny. I wonder if that has to do with affection or if that is really to do with a name sounding very much like another, perhaps more common name.
Yeah, Tenny isn't a common name, so maybe that's why.
Cheryl, meanwhile, says, guilty as charged. I'm a mum with two girls and I'm always mixing up their names. Our two dogs are just as unlucky. Even their names get mixed up sometimes. I think it's because we have so many things in our minds that we think of, you know, that and then we call it out. So yeah, I think that is exactly what the article was describing. So we're getting anecdotal validation there. And in our next story, we're talking about a think piece that was written by Professor Tajuddin Razdi. And it was titled Rethinking the Role of Civil Society in the New Malaysia. And to put it simply, I think Professor Tajuddin was making the point that fundamentally, while civil society feels that it needs to play an important role in moving things forward, that sometimes it is all to do with timing. Sometimes it doesn't do us well. It doesn't bode well to be impatient. And I think that that is something that's very hard to hear when you come from a group that has perhaps traditionally been oppressed. I think hearing that it's not time yet to solve your problem, that can be very difficult to process.
And also just navigating this new government who involves so many members of civil society, right? You know, and who in the past, there was just a very easy protagonist-antagonist kind of challenge. But now it seems to be a more collaborative space, I think, for civil society and for government. So maybe there just hasn't been that room for a shift in identity for both actually government and also for civil society.
But we don't have to speak on behalf of Professor Tajuddin because we have him on the line.
Yep, we're crossing over now to Professor Dr. Tajuddin Mohamad Razdi himself. He's from the School of Architecture and Built Environment at UCSI University. Prof, thanks so much for joining us on the program. What role did civil society play in the past and has it always evolved depending on the needs of the time?
Well, as far as I understand the civil society, they are having two roles, actually. Number one is obviously the criticism of whatever government policies that is said to be for the interest of the nation. And the other one is for the civil society getting involved in educating the citizens in certain issues, be they religious or racial or economic or certain minority group issues. I think they perform the role of education in the light that many of the times people do not really consider the authority, meaning from the government, to be a good source of information. And that is where they would play the role. So two roles, criticism and also education to the society.
And how have dynamics shifted since the change in government post GE14? And how does that require civil society to change?
Well, this is the most important question, actually. Why is it that you have to be like this? And, well, you see, we have in the election, a group of opposition party won the election. And then this group, actually, there are actually two or three groups. I'd say there are three groups in the government. But the more important thing is that there are certain parties, let's say PAS, having still a strong presence, and also UMNO having also another strong presence there. And their methodology or their approach has always been to raise issues of religion and race. They have not changed their method or their approach in this regard. And even though they are no longer in power, I have noticed that those people in the government, our friends in the opposition now in government, seem to think that just because they have power and they can change policies here and policies there, let's take the case of Mujahid Rawa. He seems to be to think that everything is okay. I mean, he's up there. He's going to change this policy, put these people in place and things like that. But he forgets that on the ground, there is this, what I call the WhatsApp war going on. And this is this medium or this media seems to be more effective than the so-called changing policies when you are in power. So those people in government do not realize that. So once they are in power, they think they can change it like that. But it's different, you know. In the olden days, there's only the television, and it's true when you have in power, and then you can do that. But now you have the smartphones and the internet, and the dynamic is has changed completely. Like the ICERD or ICERD issue. I mean, it was not supposed to be a big one, but suddenly it flared up to the point that the government had to backtrack on that issue. So that is the political dynamic in which the civil society has to understand. If they ask for something, and the say equal opportunities for say LGBT and all that, well, you still have the state religious officials, which has a lot of influence, and you still have the opposition party PAS, and then you still have also UMNO playing up the religious issue. And that is tremendous. I mean, I go to prayers and I listen to the Kutubah, which is controlled only by the state, and I tell you that is really incredible. Perhaps civil society is not listening to this Kutubah. Okay, and this is the thing that they need to understand when they broach issues such as LGBT and Shia issue and ratification of the ICERD and all that. I think this is the thing that we need to what I call real politics on the ground that civil society needs to understand.
Talk to us about the specific behaviors amongst civil society that you think needs to be changed.
Well, I think civil society have a good heart. I mean, certainly, and they have intelligence in the sense of articulating their views. But being very clear and being very forthright, once upon a time was all right. I mean, if you were in the opposite side of the fence, because the other people would not think, you can't do much, you know, so that's okay. But here, when you start calling the same thing without understanding the sensitivities of the issue, then the whole thing will completely become a backlash to you. So they first of all need to change. That's why I put that you must have patience. And patience is not just waiting and waiting. Patience is about understanding how the ground is being laid out. You know, like when you're going to war, You can see your ground, you can see your climate, you can see your troops, you can see this. You have to wait, okay? A strategic waiting, we call it, okay? So that is number one. Number two, the language that you use, the language, the expressions, you cannot be using the same exact language that you use when you were, you know, what we call shouting at the mountain. You can shout at the mountain and use any language, it's okay. But this time, if you shout in the same manner, it will cause an avalanche. And so if you are going to phrase certain things like human rights and all that, it comes in a different form now with the Friday sermon being very antagonistic towards such thing as the concept of human rights coming from the West. Actually, terms are the ones that are being, you know, thrown about without any clear understanding. And the people just read WhatsApp, you know, human rights, trying to take over Islam, that sort of thing. So you really have to thread the ground very carefully and change your language, the tone of it. You know, before it was very loud. Now it's got to be a bit, well, we would say not so loud. and also the manner in which you are having the discourse now. For instance, if you're talking about human rights and the sensitive things about Islam, so you might have to phrase it within the so-called Islamic framework rather than just pulling it out from a quote-unquote Western book and then just throwing it in the faces of the people who never read the book and never even wanted to see the book in the first place. So this is the thing that we need to do, I think.
But is this something that should apply to all civil society groups? Because, you know, for example, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, to tell minority groups who have been disenfranchised for a long time to wait a bit longer for their voices to be heard, it feels unfair. So how do you balance that desire for change with the need to understand realities on the ground and accommodate other people?
Yes, I understand perfectly about being stepped on. I mean, for 20 years, I've been with the Reformasi and I have backlash from being a government servant or a civil servant in the university. But the point here is that just because there was an election and then just because we changed the government, you have to notice that change cannot come abruptly, even though there is now a platform for change. If not before this, there's no platform for change. So now we have a platform for change. We don't have change yet. We cannot expect change yet, not for another 5 or even 10 years. The call for UiTM to be opened up to Malay, to non-Malays and all that. I mean, you can't do that immediately. And you have to earn the trust and change the narrative, which I keep calling and saying that we need to change the narrative. And the academics have to play the role. And that's why I call on civil society to use this academic, because many people, in one sense, they still respect the academics. But, you know, civil society sometimes come off as some, well, crazy people shouting in the dark, you know. This is something which we need to change. And having to wait, I'm sure it's something that people do not want, but we are adults. We are no longer children. Children usually cannot wait for gratification, but adults, we learn how to wait. As long as we can see that there are changes, minor changes being made, we track these changes, and then we feel secure that change will come. If not, if it was in the previous government, it will not come. It will get worse. But with this one, we have to track the what I call the stages of change. Like I criticized Majli the other day about not taking out the UUCA, the University and College Acts. But then he explained. He said it's going to take about a year or a year and a half to change, because there are steps to change this law and this law and this law, which I didn't know. So as long as I know change is coming, I'm content with that.
Right. You also said that impatience can throw UMNO and past in the limelight. This was perhaps seen in the discussion on the ICERD. Could you elaborate a bit more on how the demand for things to be done quickly can perhaps push the rhetoric that UMNO and past are putting out?
Well, yes, UMNO and PAS need not win so many states. They know that. They just need to have the Malays on their side. And if you were to look at the votes in the previous election, it was the non-Malays who carried the country into a new realm. I have friends in the universities who used to vote for PAS and still do. I used to vote for PAS, okay, when I understood Islam as something which is not associated with racism or bigotry. But when it is now associated with something like that, I abandoned it. But my colleagues or my friends in the public universities are still strongly behind PAS because it represents to them Islam. So if we are not careful, we play right into the hands of these people. I think the government or the people in the government at the moment understand this playbook, but the civil society does not understand. They are giving all sorts of what we call in Bahasa Melayu bola tanggung. You know, when you play badminton or sepak takraw, a nice ball, you can smash it. Well, that's called bola tanggung, and this is what you're doing. By not understanding that you have to change your tone, your language, and the phrases that you use, and understanding the framework and the ground that it's sitting on. And this is something which that needs to be done. I mean, just take, for instance, the issue of the temple, you know, the Seafield, huh? Seafield Temple. Yeah, I don't understand the people in the government. Do they think that the temple is just a building to be located somewhere else by just providing some money and then building another object 3 kilometers away or something like that? Don't they understand that the temple has its own ecosystem of worshippers and people who knows one another through the temple? This is the life of the temple, and it is not really that possible in many instances for a temple which is more than 100 years old being there, simply being taken out of its context and placing somewhere. That is certainly not the way to do things. And that is where the reluctance of the shifting of the temple comes about, I think. And for us to not understand that a temple has its own, in Malay we call it karya, okay, and here I just use the word ecosystem, meaning the people that service and worship and have social networking and spiritual contact in that place, is something which we need to understand very deeply. So is with all the issues that we are confronting with, whether you're talking about education, whether you're talking about the UEC, whether you're talking about affirmative action. You really need to do a bit of a silat. We call bunga-bunga silat. You need to do that. If not, you'll fall flat on your face, and worse, you will be giving bullets to the enemies to overcome you. And that is the greatest tragedy of all.
Professor Tajuddin, thank you for your perspective. That was Professor Dr. Tajuddin Mohamed Razdi from the School of Architecture and Built Environment at UCSI University, sharing his perspective that civil society needs to adapt its approach in order to get things done. Talk to us about whether you agree with this. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.